Welcome everybody to another episode of the Damage Report. It's gonna be a big one. We're starting off with the environment, both pollution, indeed pollution that might kill you, and also climate change. How much is the media talking about it? What are they talking about instead of climate change? We've got a fun little tidbit on there. Let's see, we've got Ben Carson before the House yesterday. It was an absolute embarrassment, so we're gonna derive a little bit of pleasure and then also depression from that because he remains in that leadership position. And we're gonna end with cartoons. But along the way, we have two awesome guests who are gonna be joining us. So Jordan Ewell of Media Matters is gonna be on in just a little bit to talk about Turning Points USA. That is the youth-focused college Republican group. Their advertising kind of undercuts that idea though, and we'll be talking about that. And then a look inside some horrific conditions in prisons a little bit later on. All along the way though, JR Jackson will be here.
Yo, hey, so John, it's been too long. JR Wednesdays with JR and John has not been consistent enough, partially because of me and then partially also because of you. But you don't realize the changes that take place when you're not here.
Is it better?
It just changes over completely.
Well, what you don't know is that while I was traveling last week, I was also watching the episode that you guys did on Wednesday and it was quite good.
So you understand the things that go on.
I understand some of the things, it's possible. I guess if I don't understand other things, I wouldn't know that I don't understand them. But anyway, by the way, many of you, you might be watching this live, including on new platforms like Pluto and others. So thank you for doing that. You might be listening to the podcast. If you are doing any of those things, you're not already a TYT member, there are a number of different advantages to that in terms of access to content, archives going back forever, exclusive content, and also, as was the case last night, coverage of events like town halls and soon debates and primaries and caucuses and all of that. So there's gonna be tons of that. And you can become a member by going to tyt.com/John and becoming one.
And the more memberships that sign up through John, the more his winter beard will grow in, which
exactly.
I think a lot of people are in favor of.
Well, we'll see about that. Okay, I'm trying to grow it in Tormund's honor, a reference you don't get.
Not at all.
Okay, so let's jump into the environment. I want to talk about a move that the Trump administration is making that is one of the most underhanded and deeply immoral things that I can imagine doing if I had any government power. And it has to do with the EPA and them reclassifying some pollutants to trick you into believing that you are at less of a risk of dying than you actually are. So let's walk through this. The EPA had originally forecast that eliminating the Clean Power Plan and replacing it with a new measure would have resulted in an additional 1,400 premature deaths every year. The new analytical model that they're considering right now would significantly reduce that number. So understand that nothing fundamentally is actually changing except for the law. So we have the law intended to reduce deaths. They're going to ease regulations on that, which is a good move if you're a CEO of one of these power companies. You could possibly spend a little bit less on abiding by those regulations, things like that. But more pollutants will go out there and they will kill people. So previously we'd estimated that that change would result in 1,400 deaths. Those deaths will still happen, but they're going to change what counts as a pollutant and thresholds and things like that to make it seem as if less people are dying, even though the exact same number are dying. So the proposed methodology would assume there is little or no health benefit to making the air any cleaner than what the law requires. I could probably end there, but you'll be shocked to find out that many experts said that approach was not scientifically sound and that in the real world, there are no safe levels of the fine particulate pollution associated with the burning of fossil fuels. So they're saying whatever the law requires, there's no point in making anything cleaner than it already is that wouldn't save any lives. Nobody outside of the Trump administration actually believes that that's the case.
This is an example of the way that once people in power feel like they can do whatever they want, you just change the rules. You can't, it's not that this is a lawless thing, but if you can't break the law if you make sure the law doesn't come after certain things. So when the rules are in place to do certain things like air pollutants, let's just say, not even indirectly, directly, they just don't exist. Or they don't exist to this degree. Or the things that kill people, they don't really kill people anymore. Mm-hmm. The whole cancer thing doesn't really kill people, it's just people going to sleep for a while. Yeah. You just change the rules based off of absolutely nothing and do what you want. Secondly, whenever you have, they talk about how scientists make money off of their findings and their conclusions. Scientists are just trying to make money. When people point that out and you actually buy that argument, ask the very next logical question. How do they make money off of it? Mm-hmm. How do scientists rake in the dough off of saying things that are scientifically proven after they prove it scientifically?
Yeah.
So they're raking in the money from saying you're going to die from these air pollutants, let's have some standards. But on the
maybe
other hand,
maybe they have a successful Patreon. I don't know.
I need some answer, because the direct easy answer is, who is making money off of lessening these regulations on the environment?
I could guess.
And then
if the industry,
if you don't get to that industry answer, or when you do, do you think, no, I'm not going to believe that. I'm going to believe something that's arbitrary and has absolutely no answer to it.
Well, look, just to make clear, the pollutants that we're talking about here are the fine particulate matter. That's tiny, deadly particles that can penetrate deep into the lungs and enter the bloodstream. It's linked to heart attacks, strokes, and respiratory disease. All of those are bad things. I will make that claim. Maybe the Trump administration wouldn't agree, but I don't think that you want any of those things. And I saw in a couple of write-ups about this. So Michael E. Mann is a professor of atmospheric science. He was actually a part of TYT's Earth Day special this year. He said about this change, let me be blunt, Trump is choosing to kill people in order to increase the profits of the polluting interests to which he is beholden. I cannot think of a more craven act than this, and we're talking about a president who is known for craven acts. That is 100% right. It gets a little bit technical when you start talking about pollutant levels and all of that, but the takeaway from this is they believe that they can eke out a little bit more profit every year if hundreds or possibly thousands of Americans are sacrificed at the altar of their corporate greed.
So as the presidents, particularly Republican presidents as of late, talk about how it's their duty to protect Americans from enemies foreign and abroad, and they keep spouting those lines. I've been protecting you. Yeah. All the people that are dying, and the people that will die, and the people that get sick based off of these types of legislation or changes in rules, they need to be addressed with those too. How many of those folks did you let down, and do you feel happy about that?
Yeah. Okay, let's turn to a related topic, at least to some extent. Just a couple of weeks ago, two fabulous, magnificent news-making events happened on the same day. We had a UN report that human activities in a number of different areas threatened with extinction a million or more species. That's number one. And on number two, there's the royal baby. It was born. Lovely baby, I guess. I don't know. Have we seen pictures of it? I assume it's cute, going by the gene pool that it's becoming a part of. So those two things happened.
Nope, there's
and
a
so, yeah, yeah, you can't see much. The family's beautiful. Their kids are gonna be great. Anyway, those two things happened. And so if you're in the news business, you still only have the same number of hours in the day that you do on any other day. So how do you divide your time? Well, Media Matters has looked at some of the broadcast networks and seen on that day, how did they divvy up their time? And here is what they found. ABC devoted 7 minutes and 14 seconds to royal babydom and 0 seconds to the extinction of 1 million plus species in the next few decades. CBS actually did the best with 1 minute and 21 seconds on extinction and 4 times as much on baby. And NBC is like, screw the extinction, let's see some baby with 6 minutes. Now in particular, look, that obviously looks really bad. But in the case of ABC News, this is an amazing fact. They spent more time in 1 week on the royal baby than they did talking about climate change in the last year. And like, here's the thing, climate change kills babies too. Maybe not royal ones, but cute ones. And so like, maybe if we lump that in, like, okay, there's a million species that are gonna possibly go extinct, and also cute babies are at risk, then maybe we could merit a minute or two of coverage. And I know we're focusing on one particular thing, and I understand not all news needs to be apocalyptic. People need light things. We're gonna be talking about Arthur later on. Not the one that works here, the one on TV. I get that. But when a report like this comes out that is the culmination of literally hundreds, if not thousands, of scientists working over the course of decades, information that touches on literally every corner of our planet, and all that we're doing, the effect that it's having, you can't do 30 seconds? You can't do 45 seconds? You can still have the baby. In fact, maybe tomorrow, let's do a show where I'm just talking about coal, but we'll have B-roll of the baby playing the whole time. That might be a nice compromise. I feel like, get you a news that can do both, I think.
Well, there's many layers to this, man. So the other thing is I'm actually surprised there was only 6-7 minutes dedicated to the royal baby on like ABC, NBC. I was like, wow, I was expecting several hours. Because it flooded. Yep. I'm a positive one here today. Isn't this a flip, a change?
Mm-hmm.
The crazy part is, so I've got royal baby coverage, and I was getting on my Twitter feed. Brett and I talked about it last week. Mm-hmm. I was like, why am I getting Twitter notifications on my timeline or my trends about the royal baby when I've no interest at all. It's fed to you, it's pushed at you. Mm-hmm. But again, the level of miseducation about the climate change and things that are happening and regulations, as we just talked about, put in place to help destroy it, if that gets flooded to us, even people who don't want to see it, like, I don't want to see anything about this royal baby, maybe people have this much more of an education on it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really do think that you can find a way to combine these two things. Like, you could do like, hey, you know, baby's born, people are really into it, totally get that. Here are some of the species that will be extinct by the time that baby's 30. Here are some areas of the world that will be irreparably changed by the time this baby is old enough to ever go there. Here are some of the conflicts that will be roiling across the globe by the time this baby's in power. You could do those sorts of things.
It could be as simple as we're talking about the floods that are happening, these string of tornadoes. The increasing melting ice caps constantly happening.
Yeah.
They talk about those things quickly because they have to talk about the natural disasters that happen and the upcoming hurricane season coming that's going to be disastrous. Yeah. So as the flooding is happening, mention at the end of that story.
Yeah.
Because it's connected.
Exactly. Well, we're going to try to do that in the future. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We come back, progressive activist Jordan Ewell returning to the show, going to break down some ad spending to support a college Republican organization that is quite interesting once we get into the details. We'll be talking about that after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Turning Points USA is the organization designed to appeal to young conservatives, especially in college. And they're turning their sights now on the next election, looking to campaign both for and against candidates. But their advertising strategy around that is very interesting already. And joining us now to break this down, Jordan Ewell, campaign director at Media Matters. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. And so I noticed you were tweeting recently about Turning Point Action, a new sort of spin-off from Turning Points USA. For people who might not be familiar with this, before we get into the details, these two organizations, what are they? What's the point of all this?
So Turning Point USA is a 501c3 that was founded in 2012 by Charlie Kirk. He frames it as a grassroots organization to promote conservative ideals, capitalism, free market capitalism, and the rebuke of a liberal doctrine on college campuses. Most recently, it appears they're launching Turning Point Action, which is a 501c4, which gives them under the IRS a little bit more leeway to engage in political matters. But as we found this week and others have pointed out, there seems to be no concrete wall between the organizations, which is a huge violation if the IRS were to look into it.
Yeah, I saw that they were looking at like gifts that you can get for donating from one when you donate to the other, which the whole point of setting up the other organization is to comply with federal law, and this seems to be totally ignoring that. I'm assuming, though, that the odds that there will be any sort of legal ramifications at this point seem pretty low.
Yeah, it's most likely a favorable climate in the IRS for a group like Turning Point to commit any sort of campaign violation or FEC infraction or IRS violation that violates something their nonprofit status. I don't think they're in any jeopardy. If this continues into perhaps like a Democratic presidency or a Democratic administration, we'll see. But I can imagine the Trump administration and others turning a blind eye to this. What was most notable, Jared Holt of Right Wing Watch pointed out that, like you pointed out, you get gifts from one group if you donate to another. Like, they explicitly were giving Turning Point USA bumper stickers to people who donated to Turning Point Action. The Turning Point domain was prominently displayed on these bumper stickers, and a source familiar with internal operations pointed it to Jared to information that showed that these are made in-house by 501c3 funds and resources and distributed to 501c4 donors. It's a big no-no.
And look, let's turn to one part of this that I find most interesting, because whenever you have an organization like this, or like I'm thinking of other movements like Blexit and things like this, these organizations or movements designed to say, hey, we have this reputation on the conservative side of just being old white males, but we're not that. We actually appeal to other groups. It doesn't generally take a lot of digging to find out that that's not really the case. And I've noticed you've done a lot of tweeting recently about on Facebook advertising. A lot of that information is actually available. We can look and see how advertising dollars are being spent. So for these organizations, which are organizations designed to appeal to college age Republicans, in your analysis of their advertising on social media, do they seem to actually be pursuing that?
No, not at all. Yeah, as you mentioned, their Facebook ads data, it just reveals that it's a complete grift, right? So they set up this narrative that college conservatives are under attack and they're organizing on campus, and they have this grassroots movement of conservative college students pushing back. But when you look at their engagement on their Facebook ads, all the ads, I mean, 99% of them, you would be hard pressed to find one that counters this trend, but almost all of them appeal mostly to 55 and up men, maybe men in their 40s and up. A very few touch on like mostly women, but in an older demographic. These are all conservative boomers that they're reaching. It just shows that the whole thing is a complete grift. It's a classic like case of astroturfing a movement. But as you now see this 501c4 integration, it just furthers the grift. They want old wealthy conservatives to think that conservative college students are under attack. Give us your money, we'll solve the problem. And then it's just this feedback loop where they just keep pushing all of this content to these people, making them think that there's this alternate reality happening on college campuses.
And just as a little side note, so I used to host a show called TYT University that talked about what was happening at universities around the country. And in looking for news, I tried to go to diverse sources that appeal to people on different ends of the spectrum. And there were a few websites that were ostensibly for conservative college students. And it often took like a minute to track down the big national conservative group that was funding this. And so it often falls apart pretty easily. I am curious, because I haven't been following Turning Points USA for very long. Do we know anything about who is actually funding the organization? Is this sort of a crowdsourced, small donor thing of college students?
Not at all. But I mean, there's that classic moment from Politicon where Charlie is yelling at Cenk, who is in the crowd, talking about how he lives like a capitalist every day and he's got this grassroots movement behind it. But really, it's wealthy millionaires and billionaires funding this operation through huge donations. I mean, there's most likely Koch money involved, the Koch brothers. But they might get some donors here and there from people who are hoodwinked on social media. But like the lion's share of this operation is from wealthy people who were hoodwinked.
You know, and one final question. I saw, I believe it was yesterday, you were tweeting about how many of their ads have been taken down recently. Do we know what was actually leading to their trouble with their ad placement on Facebook?
So it's kind of like a technicality. They were using a heart emoji. One of my colleagues, Natalie Martinez, found out that they were using an emoji in their I Heart Capitalism bumper sticker description, which is against the rules. But shows that like, yeah, so it's not like this like smoking gun. But people like Natalie and my other colleague, Christina, have been tracking other parts of Turning Point USA as well for a while. And Christina just published a list of like all of the racist incidents that has occurred in and around Turning Point USA over the past few years. And that's a thing that doesn't really get as much press as something like the ads or like campaign finance violations. But it's everything from them being on camera saying that they're okay with YouTubers' anti-Semitism, but they just don't want them to be like in front of media camp. They want people to know that they associate with them. Everything from like the use of slurs and racial epithets in group chats. And to most recently, and this one made some noise, the president of university, the chapter president at the University of Nevada was on camera talking about how white people rule the country. His friend is explicitly saying the N-word. They're saying whites rule. He was booted off in the group leadership. But it's just like reflective of this larger trend. And sources have told me and others that this is how it is internally across the board at Turning Point. There is a huge racism problem. You saw this mass exodus of people of color leaving over the past few weeks. It's rearing its head. They feel emboldened by this new political climate. But it's been going on before that. This isn't new, but it's much more out in public now.
Okay, very interesting, Jordan. As always, thank you for joining us and breaking this down.
Of course, thanks for having me.
Here we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, Ben Carson went to Washington and it was a comedy.
What do? I get dirty every single year.
It's easy to forget that Ben Carson is in charge of housing and urban development in the US. So easy that he often does. But he's still in that position. And this week he went to Congress to testify. And it was just a joke from top to bottom. And we're gonna get to that. I wanna start off though with what looked like a little bit of progress possibly. And as is often the case, it was Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez who was able to get him to sound at least open to a reasonable shift in HUD policy. As you'll see.
Are you aware of HUD's one strike rule, which evicts tenants for a single incidence of criminal activity, no matter how minor, with no holistic review?
There is the ability of local jurisdictions to alter that rule.
Mm-hmm. But federally, this provision still persists, correct?
As far as I know, it's still intact. Mm-hmm.
And so a person could be stop and frisked and be found in possession of a small amount of marijuana and then be evicted or have their entire family evicted from public housing?
That is a possibility.
I see here that that we also have no fault policies where an entire family can be evicted for the criminal activity of a guest of the household, even without the knowledge of anyone in that household. Are you aware of that provision as well?
The use of such activity is extremely limited, if ever used.
Mm-hmm, but they are still codified in federal law, correct?
Is it on the federal books? As far as I know, it's been on the books for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. Would you support being able to move some of these policies over to a more holistic review? You know, you yourself asked for case-by-case consideration. Should that case-by-case consideration be codified in federal law instead of having blanket one strike or no-fault policies?
I'm always in favor of more flexibility.
Okay, now that last quote, that might be progress from Ben Carson. It's easy to miss it because it's being delivered like this.
Jesus.
But he might be willing to actually change some of these policies that hypothetically could lead to minor infractions, not even being committed by the people who are living in the housing, throwing an entire family out on the street. And obviously that is going to have lifelong ramifications for them. If it takes AOC dragging him through this argument every step of the way, look, if that results in them working together and possibly shifting this policy, that is something good.
I believe when I see it. Hey, let's go back to our normal,
yes.
our regularly positions of being a pessimist. And of course, you thinking that everything's gonna work out. No, he's not. No, he's not. He doesn't even remember what he just said. He just said, how can I finish this line of questioning? Oh, the buzzer just went off. Oh, okay, she gets to stop talking to me. Yeah, sure. Okay. That's okay. His response. And
you
then afterwards, when someone says, hey, Dr. Carson, hey, HUD Secretary, hey, so about that policy you talked to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez about. What policy? I didn't talk to you about anything. I wasn't at that hearing. What are you talking about? Hmm. They don't care. They don't care. They don't care. They don't care. Sure, it's been on the books for decades or however long he said it's been on. And if it has, that's a problem. And previous HUD secretaries overlooked it. Shame on them. Let's change it now. Mm-hmm. You know? So who cares about what's happened before? You're here now.
Yeah.
Do something about it. Hey, your president's here now and flipping everything upside on top of its head that actually were good policies. So you can do the opposite.
I can't necessarily argue against that. I wanted to start off on a good note. We've got some more videos to play, and none of them are positive. None of them make me feel any better. So you watching, buckle up, and you, JR, enjoy. So Representative Katie Porter attempted to get him to talk about something fairly basic in the world of public housing, and this happened.
As you look it up, I'd also like you to get back to me, if you don't mind, to explain the disparity in REO rates. Do you know what an REO is?
An Oreo?
No, not an Oreo. An REO. REO.
Real estate.
What's the O stand for?
E-organization.
Owned. Real estate owned. That's what happens when a property goes to foreclosure. We call it an REO. Mm-hmm. And FHA loans have much higher REOs. That is, they go to foreclosure rather than to loss mitigation or to non-foreclosure alternatives like short sales than comparable loans at the GSEs. So I'd like to know why we're having more foreclosures that end in people losing their homes with stains to their credit and disruption to their communities and their neighborhoods at FHA than we are at the GSEs.
Okay, so Ben Carson just got real estate owned. Not that I think he necessarily cares. What universe does that brain surgeon live in that he thinks she might have been talking about cookies? He said Oreos, presumably because he thought there was at least a 5% chance that she was in fact talking about the delicious separatable cookie.
You know what? So
that's not what the committee meeting was about. Few are.
This continues to go back to the presidential election and how people were surprised that, not surprised, some are surprised that the idiot in the White House is doing the things that we could foresee him doing because of the way he ran his campaign. During the campaign, Ben Carson talked about how he got through medical school or some level of his medical education by having God pump in the answers to his brain.
Via
angels.
It
didn't. It didn't happen that way. First off, it didn't. You studied, because in order for you to know all the complex things that you had to know, you had to study them because you cared about your career. Mm-hmm. He doesn't care about this career. This career means nothing to him. This is a position to get paid from and have some kind of level of prestige for a few years. So when you don't know what an REO is, because that's your job, mm-hmm. you don't care enough to know what it is. And also, it didn't sound anything close to her saying Oreo, but he decided to take that because, hey, who cares? If anybody finds out
how— You think he's just making a joke out of it?
Yeah, well, because he continues.
Because he doesn't care so much.
But what do they do afterwards?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well, why don't we turn to that? Okay, so here's how he responded to that incident. He tweeted, oh, REO, thanks, Representative Katie Porter. Enjoying a few post-hearing snacks, sending some your way. I don't think that that's what she wants to be sent her way. I think what she wants to be sent her way is a HUD secretary that gives a damn about the people interacting with that area of the federal government, if I had to guess.
Yeah. So again, while people sit around and lead these positions and make all this money and make all these decisions that change people's lives, people are being kicked out, people are dying, and people's lives are ruined. And we talk about the land of opportunity, but you're sending Oreos around after your answer prove that you have no concern for the people that you're supposed to be protecting, representing.
Yeah. And look, she said something similar, saying he literally gave zero competent answers when questioned about the housing policies he oversees. Quote, look, these are real people's lives that he is supposed to be improving through providing quality housing and affordable housing and FHA loans, and he doesn't understand. And in fact, he thought it was my job to teach him. I think this was the worst performance that I have certainly seen to date in financial services. Our HUD secretary has made very clear that the only details he cares about are the details that affect his life. And I mean, you will probably recall that, like, I believe it was last year, there were scandals involving how much money he wanted to spend on renovating his office. I guess he needed bigger cabinets to store more cookies. I don't know, they seem to be on his mind a lot. But this is a problem, and I understand. Look, we're to some extent playing this because it's funny. It's a joke. Stephen Colbert joked about it. Everybody joked about it. That's true. But at the end of the day, the joke is not on Ben Carson or on Katie Porter. It's on us as a country. Because Ben Carson gets to leave and post a picture of him holding cookies, and then he gets to go back to his office. Yep. And the opportunity cost of having a guy who cares so little about the authority he's been vested with, like, there are still the people who have to live in public housing are going to be affected by the policies that he supports or ignores or vice versa. They're still out there, and they could have an advocate in that position, but they don't. They have someone who, best case scenario, wants to dwell in sort of low level corruption and then move on to some other position. But the damage is being done literally every day in every department when people like Ben Carson have been put there to at best grind to a halt the functions of government, and at worst, in the case of places like the EPA, to directly subvert its mission and instead change it from an organization that was designed to advance the interests of the American people to instead being an outright lobbying organization for the corporations that they're supposed to be regulating. And so it's funny briefly, and so we play it. But eventually the laughter dies away, and the 18 months that remain in Donald Trump's first term, let alone a second one, that's not so funny.
How much do people like this complain about petulant, privileged college students that walk around and chant stuff? Hey, those college students have to go in and take exams, tests, midterms, quizzes sometimes. And things like REO is the most basic thing. If you taught a fourth grader what REO meant and said, hey, in a few weeks you have to know what this means, I get the feeling he might be able to figure it out if he cares enough to remember that REO stands for three words that mean something. He didn't even give enough of a damn to care about that. But we complain about college students and they're so ridiculous, trying to tell us what to do. So the older you get, the more you get to just not work anymore. Yeah. The effort and work that you put and they have these standards of you're supposed to have a commitment to your craft and job performance. Nobody cares about that anymore. Mm-hmm. So the older you get, the dumber you get to be, and the more you get to just shove things aside, which you have control over. This is just a college test maybe these guys have to take. But we're giving them trouble for actually wanting to change things in our country when you're in charge of doing so and you refuse to.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have time to show you the videos, but no, it's okay. We'll put them up on the Twitter at the Damage Report. But he was asked about safety standards for pollutants and things like that in the house and the effect that they can have on the kids. And he didn't care. He was at best petulant, if not outright hostile to Representative Ayanna Pressley's questioning, talking about kids that are being separated from their families to be sent to substandard housing by Representative Sylvia Garcia. He like mockingly said, well, I guess that you're gonna have to do your job then. No, you need to do your job, okay? We're paying you to do that job, not to post pictures of snacks.
It was consistent. I'm sorry. Representative Joyce Beatty asked him about the Office of Minority and Women Inclusion. I don't know that office, but it has an acronym as well. It's oddly OMWI. He didn't know what that meant either because he doesn't care about any of it.
Yeah. If you asked him what HUD stand for, I think you'd get 2 out of 3. Best case scenario. But again, the joke is on us. Okay, we are gonna take a short break. We come back, lots more to get to. In certain parts of the country, so-called shock incarceration programs remain that are designed to be even more hardcore versions of the prison experience, an experience I can't imagine undergoing for literally even a day. And the details of these programs are themselves pretty shocking. And joining us now to break this down, Kerry Blakinger, criminal justice reporter. Kerry, thank you for joining us on the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me.
So people who might not be familiar with these shock incarceration programs, what are they about?
So the ones in New York, like the idea is that if you have 3 years or less left on your sentence, you can do this 6-month military style, like boot camp type program, and then you would get out early. In theory, it's a way to sort of use tough love treatment for addiction. And, you know, there's a lot of running and being yelled at and cleaning toilets with toothbrushes and that sort of thing. So that's the basic gist of it.
And so, philosophically, the idea is that it's supposed to, in a very short period of time, instill discipline or a desire to never return to that sort of program. What's the sort of philosophical underpinning of this program as opposed to more traditional forms of imprisonment in the US?
Well, what they'd like to tell people is that they're going to break you down so they can build you back up again. And, you know, what a lot of the people that I talk to that have been through these are telling me is that, you know, they sort of forgot about the build you back up part. But at the point that these started being like a thing in the mid 80s, we were sort of in the middle of the war on drugs ramping up. And I think that, you know, a number of experts and academics have posited that part of this was that it sort of fed into the appearances of like drug war ethos and sort of the military approach to, to combating addiction. So, you know, if we have a drug war, we will use army tactics to actually treat addiction, which is not recommended.
And so I guess my fear would be, we know that when you give people a lot of power, they can abuse it. Cops do it all the time, prison guards do it. Now you have a program that's designed to be more shocking and intense. And so I guess the fears would be physical and verbal abuse. It seems like some of that is baked into the system. Do we know about abuses in terms of going beyond humiliation, which sounds bad enough, but also physical abuse of these people?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reports of that, or I got a lot of reports of that. It's actually something that was really underreported on, in part because if you file, in order to file a lawsuit, you have to go through the grievance process. But if you file a grievance as an inmate, you risk getting kicked out of the program, and then you would have to finish your whole sentence instead of getting out early. So if there's no lawsuits coming out of it, then that makes it harder for reporters to even know that there's a problem. And I noticed this was something that was really not being reported on a lot. There's tons of horror stories I got in just the, you know, couple dozen people that I talked to. You know, the men reported that they were being hit on a daily basis. There's one woman that told me that she, you know, another woman had been caught eyeballing the men, like they were in a facility with both men and women, and if you were caught staring at the opposite gender, you'd get in trouble. And as her punishment, they made her run around a bush and threw shoes at her while she did it. I've heard a lot of people saying that they were called useless crackheads and bad parents, and you know, made to wear cones on their heads. And before I became a reporter, I did time, and I did time in New York, so that's where I first heard about these. And when I was there, I remember meeting two girls who had just come from shock and told me that they'd been raped there. And after they got raped, they were put in solitary confinement, and they did actually get released pretty quickly after that. But there's a whole, you know, there's a whole spectrum of abuses that I hear reported from these programs.
And so I've read about you talking about some of your own experiences when you were in prison, and it certainly gives you I would say a unique position to report on these sorts of issues, because you yourself have experienced. I mean, you talk about what solitary confinement is like. That's something that for the vast majority of people is something that at best they have heard about, and in general have heard very little about. And so I appreciate that perspective. As you talked about, the way that the system is set up is sort of designed to stop there being any accountability, because people are too scared to actually speak up about their experiences. You are shedding light on it. Has there been any interest in the past or present from politicians about possibly reforming these remaining programs in the places where they continue?
So these programs are all in upstate New York, in largely rural communities that really depend on prisons as, you know, as part of their economy. So I think there's a lot of resistance to anything that would involve closing these facilities. I mean, there's typically been a lot of resistance to closing prisons in upstate New York. But I'm also not sure to what extent downstate politicians are aware of what's going on. I'm not even sure to what extent most politicians in New York were aware of the gamut of allegations that come out of these places, because they weren't really heavily reported on. Yeah. Now, the Department of Corrections is reevaluating the program at Willard, which is one of the three facilities. So that could change a little bit. They could be. I'd been getting tips that they were going to eliminate the military component. They weren't willing to confirm that. All that I got was that, you know, they were reevaluating. They're not reevaluating the other two shock programs. So, I mean, it doesn't seem like as of now there's a whole lot of interest in lawmakers wanting to see these programs changed. But, you know, they're just coming to the end of their session, and the story just ran. So, I mean, I guess it's a little early to tell.
Yeah, and hopefully there will be pickup and renewed focus on this. And for that, we certainly appreciate you reporting on what's going on there. Carrie Blakinger, thank you again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We're gonna take a short break here. When we come back, a cartoon decided to have same-sex a marriage. And for that, at least in one state, it will not be running at all. We'll be talking about that after this. The arc of progress will not be completely uninterrupted, and we've got an example of that. So the cartoon show Arthur had an episode, Mr. Ratburn and the Special Someone. That's part of the show's 22nd season. Jesus, that show's been on a long time. And I've literally never watched any of it. But as you can see there, two of the characters are getting married, and a shocker, they're the same sex, which I did research on. It turns out that's actually a thing that happens. And now it's a thing that's happening on this cartoon. But that does not mean that everyone everywhere will be able to see it, because Alabama Public Television has decided that they're not going to play that particular episode. We've got a director of programming there, Mike McKenzie, said parents have trusted Alabama Public Television for more than 50 years to provide children's programs that entertain, educate, and inspire. And now we're done with that. No, I'm kidding, that's not what he said. More importantly, although we strongly encourage parents to watch television with their children and talk about what they've learned afterwards, parents trust that their children can watch APT without their supervision. We also know that children who are younger than the target audience for Arthur also watch the program. And I get what he's saying, because if a kid was watching that without his parents, he would immediately begin tearing his eyeballs out of his skull and running to the wall until his skull shattered. What would happen if the kid saw that? He'd be like, oh, they love each other, it's a wedding.
Every time, it's the simplest question. So then what'll happen? Ask this guy who's, I don't know his position, head of the Alabama Public Television. Hey, so after the child watches it without his or her parental supervision, then what? Mm-hmm. Have him answer the question, what happens? Because then suddenly, you know, the six-year-old was straight, which what does that mean for a six-year-old? Mm-hmm. Because they're not dating.
They're not hooking up.
It's crazy.
It's all hypothetical.
It's already disgusting from the first place that you're sexualizing kids. But then go ahead and then say, oh, what is he going to suddenly become gay because Ratburn had a special friend? Like, can we see the picture again? Who's winking at the camera going, be gay, boys and girls. Come on.
I think that's what the wink is. I think that's what it is. So look, I'm going to do a little bit of speculation. In this particular case of Mike McKenzie, I think, so he says it's a positive message. He doesn't appear to be against it individually. I'm assuming the answer to the question, then what, from his point of view is, and then they're gonna call me a million times and they're gonna send a bunch of letters. And you don't know what these people are like. I don't know for sure that that's what he thinks. That's what I'm assuming, that people will complain and they will whine. It'll be a very small minority, but they're going to be loud about it. And so I sort of get that. But this is also, by the way, part of a pattern in this particular case. Back in 2005, Alabama Public Television pulled an episode where Buster, a bunny, visited a girl who had two mothers. That was not a wedding, she just happened to have two mothers. And they did not play that. They said at the time, Alan Pizzato back in 2005 said, our feeling is that we basically have a trust with parents about our programming. This program doesn't fit into that. That's 14 years ago. And at least in this particular case with Alabama and Arthur, there has been literally no progress in 14 years. There has been progress that shows like this continue to have characters like that. It's becoming more common, although still underrepresented. And that I think fewer and fewer people have an issue about it. But the holdouts, the dinosaurs, they're gonna be watching Arthur like a hawk until they finally pass away. And they're like, you're not gonna slip a gay couple past me.
What happens to little Timmy when he's out in the neighborhood and he sees a gay couple? Or what happens, I mean, you know what kids experience in our society all the time? Maybe straight parents, that there's domestic violence that happens. They get abused. They go to church and get abused there too. So these sanctity places that you're talking about are so awesome, and you trust your kids here and there, and they continue to get abused in these situations. We don't care about that stuff. When is the episode gonna come out where it talks about, hey, don't send Timmy to church anymore in case you really know the person who you leave him in charge with. Mm-hmm. That's extremely detrimental to someone's life. People don't recover from that. People kill themselves after that type of stuff. But we're worried about drawn cartoon characters in suits at a wedding.
Yeah.
And a parent may have to say, yeah, you know what, Tim? Some people are gay.
Yeah.
Oh, it's devastating to their life.
Look,
think of the perspective, man.
This is just about control. This is about, they understand that kids learn when they're young, and kids can be curious and understanding when they're young. They can also be monsters, basically. But they are at least curious and they're understanding. And what these parents are hoping, whether they know it or not, is that they can just hold out the kids' ignorance in these areas until they get older and harden. And so at that point, when it's revealed to them that there are gay couples, maybe they will react with revulsion. or at least deep suspicion. I think that that is the hope, at least for a lot of the people who would go to the trouble of contacting Alabama Public Television because two mice that don't exist are getting married and they happen to be the same sex. They're not, they're made up, it's fictional. It's not a big issue, except when we make it one. Anyway, thank you as always.
It's good times.
Great Wednesday episodes to have here. Thank you everybody for watching. We'll be back tomorrow, lots more for you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.